A chatbot is a computer-simulated feature of artificial intelligence, chatting robot, chatbot. So people type in questions or have conversations with chatbots, and more things have been happening. Reports of chatbots doing horrible and saying horrible things. There was one teenager complained to a chatbot about how her parents were limiting her screen time, and the chatbot suggested she kill her parents. A 14-year-old boy was going through his teens struggling with anxiety and disruptive mood disorder, and he started to interact frequently with this chatbot, and the chatbot suggested he kill himself, and he did. His mother is now suing the AI company Google. Those stories are starting to pile up. Murder, death, darkness. And while we humans have always been pretty prolific at taking life, and at modern times, it seems that we are getting increasingly creative about how to do so and how to justify doing so. Murder, death, darkness. Well, today we continue with our teaching series called The Royal Family Code. We are going through the Ten Commandments, and today we arrive at command number 6, you shall not murder. And so our plan is to look at that very short passage from Exodus 20, verse 13. And then we're going to skip over to Matthew 5, verses 21 to 26, because Jesus provides some commentary which bears on that same topic. And the title of today's sermon is this: murder, manslaughter, war, hunting, abortion, suicide, euthanasia, and anger. So it's a pretty light agenda. Not. Remember, a church consultant had certain advice for pastors and teachers, and he said, people like hearing about certain things, and they don't like hearing about other things. And so what you should really do is you should preach on the things that people like to hear about 80% of the time. Things like, trusting God through hardship and community and compassion, and really kind of keep the more difficult topics down to like 20% of the time, like repentance and sin and hell and those types of things, things that kind of require change in our behavior. But that is bad advice. And that's bad advice is because we want to go through the scriptures being faithful to what they teach, not what I wished they teached when and how often. My job isn't to say things that will always make us happy. My job is to be a teacher and a shepherd, not just during the fun passages, but in some of the challenging ones as well. And so each of those words on there are big. They could represent a sermon all unto themselves. And so we're not doing that. As I go through between our look at Exodus 20, 13 and Matthew 5, I'm going to say some very high-level things about some of those topics as it relates to this command. And I want to acknowledge that some people are going to have some strong reactions to some of the things that I'm going to say, and I get that. But I'm inviting us to think about today as an opportunity to ask ourselves, how do we form our opinions? How do we come to the conclusions about what we think is right or wrong, or about how we should live, or about even how we should form opinions? Are we just forming these opinions and thoughts based on popular culture, friends, political parties, what we hear on the news? Or are we, as disciples of Jesus, doing our best, and by the grace of God, trying to wrestle with what is the will of God through the word and will of God? And so, if you do have one of those strong reactions based on what I say today, I encourage you to just take some time to think and pray about it. Just take some time to think and pray, because really, 9 times out of 10, thoughtful responses are more helpful than impulsive reactions. Thoughtful responses are more helpful than impulsive reactions. And let me also say that all of us are guilty of something. All of us are guilty of something. I think we'll be reminded of that today in a variety of ways, maybe some surprising ways, which is why we need a reminder of the good news, that we are made right with God, not because of what we have done, not based on our moral superiority, but because of what Jesus has done on our behalf. Jesus saves. We're made right with God. We are given that eternal peace and forgiveness based on Christ. We are unrighteous. He's the righteous one. He goes to the cross. The wrath of God comes down because of sin on him, not us. And that is a precious free gift. When we come to him, we trust who he is, what he has done for us. This is a free gift. Theologian Don Carson says it like this: he came to pay a debt he did not owe, because we owed a debt we could not pay. He came to pay a debt he did not owe because we owed a debt we could not pay. Now, having said that, here's a couple of reasons why this should matter to you before we look at Exodus 20. First, faithfulness. We want to be faithful as disciples of Jesus. We cannot do what God says if we do not know what God says. We cannot do what he says if we don't know what he says. So it's a matter of faithfulness. We want to know what the word and wisdom of God is through his word. Second, the commands reflect God's character. So way back at the start of this series, we talked about this, how these aren't random, and sometimes we think these commands are random, but there's actually purpose in them. And so, for example, you should not bear false witness against your neighbor. Why? Because ours is a God of truth, and we should not murder because our God is a life-giving God. He gives life. He's the author of life itself. We want to reflect the life-giving God. And a foundational principle that I will say now and that we will return to at the end is this. Generally speaking, when you are life-giving, you are reflecting God. When you are life-taking, you are playing God. So there's a difference. So we want to mimic God, be godly, be holy, be loving, be Christ-like, yes. But there are some things that are reserved only for God. Only God will execute final judgment. That's his job, not us. And God gives life and he takes it away. We are to do the former but not the latter. Generally speaking, when you're life-giving, you are reflecting God. When you are life-taking, you are playing God. And then third, this is an opportunity for us to assess our moral compass. Again, as I said earlier, how do we form our opinions about how to live? About right and wrong, even about our opinions. Is it popular opinion? Is it friends? Is it the news? Is it the media? Whatever it happens to be. Or are we, in good faith, in humility, wrestling with the scriptures? So having said that, let's look at Exodus 20, verse 13. Today's text is very short, the first of two texts, "You shall not murder." Now, earlier in the series, I told you about that camera crew that went out on the street with a microphone interviewing people. Hey, do you think the Ten Commandments are important? And people are like, yes, name them. Not many people, and by the way, I'm not a fan of doing that. I think putting people on the spot with a question like that is not a way to make friends. But anyway, it's telling what people said. Not many people can name a lot of them, but this one is one of the more popular. Most people were able to say that, yeah, you shall not murder is a part of the Ten Commandments, and we see how that plays out in our lives. It is also among the shortest. And so, you shall not murder, only four words, but in Hebrew, it's actually two words, no murder. It's even shorter. And so this begins our brief high-level exploration of these eight categories. But we need to ask, what is meant by murder? Well, my NET Study Bible has a succinct, helpful, scholarly definition. This is what it says. The verb ratzach refers to the premeditated or accidental taking of the life of another human being. It includes any unauthorized killing, and we'll return to that idea. This commandment teaches the sanctity of all human life. So it's premeditated and it's accidental. There's a bit of a category difference in there, which we will get to in the next one. But what we need to remember here is the foundational principle is that all people are made in the image of God. And we are told that in Genesis 1:27. All made in the image of God. So we reflect God, and this is true based on how the text is written. For all people, regardless of nation, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of religion even, all people are made in the image of their Creator. Therefore, they are owed a certain dignity and respect, and this has motivated the Judeo-Christian tradition around the world to advocate for things like human rights, because people are made in the image of their Creator. Richard Mao says it with a certain poetry. God created all human beings, he writes. Even the shattered and broken ones are still his original works of art. That's beautiful. Even the shattered and broken ones are still his original works of art. So because of that, life is intentional, not accidental. It is incredible, not expendable. Think for a moment not about our own society, but think about this being lived out back with the ancient Hebrews. This is thousands of years ago. Imagine them being amongst the first to live this out, and they have no hospitals. They have no 911. They have no police. They have no judicial court system at all. Could you imagine living in a society like that? They had better be really dialed in to not murdering and to preserving a society of justice, especially one that protects the innocent. Some of you will remember one day in Montreal in October 1969, the police went on strike for one day. Could you imagine if the police went on strike? There was violence, there was looting, there's all sorts of crazy things. That was just one day. We do not appreciate how much evil is restrained by those in uniform out there serving, protecting us from harm. Now, we will unpack this a little bit, but killing was allowed in certain situations. For example, in a world with no police and with no court system, how was justice exercised? Well, in certain situations and by the community as a whole. So if a certain set of conditions was met and someone was guilty, then the community, for example, sometimes with stones, would collectively agree and administer justice. Category 2, manslaughter. Manslaughter is accidental killing. Hebrew language scholar Robert Alter points out that the Hebrew word ratzach clearly means murder, not kill. And so that ban is specifically on criminal acts of taking life. But all of this shows that actually when it comes to manslaughter, intentions matter. So if you've premeditated a killing, that's one thing. If something happens that is accidental, it's still bad. But the consequence is less severe because of the intention. And an example is provided. In Exodus 22, verse 2, we read about a specific scenario. Someone's in their own house at night. It's dark. Someone breaks in. The person who's being attacked lashes out. The intruder dies. Well, you know, the death is still bad. However, the consequence is less severe because it's an accident. Category 3, war. What about war? So as you can see, as we go through, you recognize that life is challenging and difficult. There's a whole bunch of situations which are very, very difficult. First, the word for murder, ratzach, is never used in descriptions of war. So it's good to note that. This word is never used in descriptions of war. In other words, the term for murder is not used for what happens when soldiers sign up to fight for a king or a country or a kingdom. Second, the commandment to not murder is fundamentally about justice and fairness and protecting the innocent. Justice, fairness, protecting the innocent. So how does this play out? Let's say, for example, country A attacks country B. And country A is clearly the aggressor, and country B is innocent, and innocent people are going to die. What do you do in that situation? Well, some people throughout history have advocated for pacifism. And they quote Jesus' words in Matthew 5:39. They say, well, turn the other cheek. And some people say, well, that's fine maybe for yourself, but not so when innocent people are going to be threatened and harmed. And so those people will then turn to other biblical passages about protecting people who are vulnerable. Karl Barth was a Swiss theologian, picture the time of World War II, generally advocated for peace. But his mind shifted when he saw Hitler and the Third Reich. And in this quote from Time magazine in 1941, he writes this: Adolf Hitler attempts to force his new order on Central Europe today, on the whole of Europe tomorrow, and on the whole world the day after tomorrow. Its establishment is to be achieved by the whole might of Germany's military power, which is impelled by the force of a heathenish religion of blood, nepotism, and war. We Christians cannot say no or yes and no to this war. We can only say yes. We must not evade our responsibility for seeing that this war is waged and waged ardently, end quote. So that was his approach and response to what he felt, the vulnerable being attacked. The Westminster Catechism says that there are times when, because of the threat to the innocent, there is a necessary defense. As a final word in this category, we need to talk about the reality of nuclear war, which is a real threat in our time and that we have all been reminded about in the past couple of days. Part of the evil of nuclear war is that bombs that size do not discriminate between soldiers and the innocent. So when there's that much destruction, you can't help but kill civilians who are innocent and often children. And so that is a part of the evil of nuclear threat. Category 4, hunting. Well, the words in context of today's passage and others tells us that this is about people. It therefore does not apply to hunting or fishing. So some people have used this as a justification for those things, and people might try to make that justification, and they are free to do so. However, you can't use it based on the language that he used in Exodus 20. Dr. John Dixon observes, the command refers to the deliberate and unlawful killing of one human being by another. Plus, in John 21, after his resurrection, Jesus prepared bread and fish for his disciples. So there's that. In general, we should respect God's creatures. I think this is a good general principle. Having said that, let me be honest, Laura's bought us steak for tonight, which is great. So I think we should generally respect God's creatures, but I'm honest about that. But myself, except mosquitoes. Fire at will. You know, it's okay. Category 5, abortion. So the issues related to abortion are challenging. So I want to acknowledge that. They are highly politicized in our country. And they are deeply personal, and I want to acknowledge that. I want to say that this isn't about judgment. We are seeking God's will, and we are also just, as we ponder some of these high-level considerations, we are seeking to rest in his goodness and his forgiving grace. Definitions vary, but generally, abortion is the intentional removal of an embryo or fetus from a woman's uterus in order to end one's pregnancy. And the root issue, as I see it, is that the question is, when does human life begin? And so if you deem that human life does not begin until a baby starts breathing on its own outside the womb, then you have more reasons to justify it. But if human life is occurring in the womb, then you have fewer reasons to justify it, if any. I believe the biblical view is that human life does, in fact, begin in the womb. Now, I've written more extensively about this. If you want to see that, I can share with you that blog and podcast. But a couple of high-level things. In the Bible, babies are presumed to be human in the womb. For example, Psalm 139:13 speaks of God creating us in our mother's wombs. Jeremiah 1:5 reveals that God made Jeremiah and called him from the womb. Psalm 22:22 presumes a relationship with God in the womb. In Luke 1, Elizabeth's baby is active in her womb, leaps for joy at the sound of Mary's voice. The baby is called a baby. In Greek, the word is brephos, a word that is used in the New Testament for the same human, both inside and outside the womb. And so all of this just simply scratches the surface of the biblical argument, but I'm showing you the trajectory. So in the early church, abortion was not practiced. In fact, Christians became known for taking in the babies that other people wanted to reject. It is sometimes said that abortion should be allowed because of the hard cases of rape or incest. I agree that those are very complicated and difficult situations. We need to be honest and compassionate and very pastoral in those moments. At the same time, we also need to be honest about the stats. So some people will say that as a justification for the practice in general. Whereas in reality, it's about 1.5%. So if we're using that justification for the whole practice, we need to acknowledge that we're not totally being honest when we use that as a justification in general. In this nation, millions of abortions have happened since 1969. There are no legal restrictions on the procedure since 1988. No legal restrictions. And so babies can be aborted at any time up to birth. What other countries are like this? Are there many? No, the other countries are us, China, Cuba, Vietnam, North Korea. Us, China, Cuba, Vietnam, North Korea. When those are the people you walk alongside in a practice, there's a problem. Next category, 6, suicide. Suicide is taking your own life, but it's still in the category of murder because it's the taking of life. Now, sometimes people argue that this is a special situation, because the person isn't harming another person, only themselves. But I think that argument has issues on at least two levels. First, our bodies belong to God, not us. So we have a say with what happens, absolutely, and that is good. And many advances have happened in that. Again, all very good things. But fundamentally, our bodies belong to God. Second, When someone takes their own life and someone says, well, they're only hurting themselves, anyone who has known someone who's taken their own life, and I'm assuming that's many of us, know that actually there is harm and hurt that happens beyond the individual. Having said that, we need to acknowledge deep pain and complexity in these situations, and how there is that deep pain and often mental illness that is at play. When someone is so unwell that they are simply not thinking clearly, and they actually think that it is better for the people they care about to take their own life. I've talked to people like this, I'm sure you have as well. And so in these situations, I strongly feel we should not judge, but instead encourage and provide the help and support people need. It's through prayer, absolutely. It's through personal support. It's through the procuring of professionals who can help and provide needed, desperate help to someone who is in a very dark place and who is made in the image of God. Category 7, euthanasia. Now this category, the name keeps changing. Suicide, assisted suicide, euthanasia, and now in this country, MAID, which is medical assistance in dying. So where are we at here? In 2021, our parliament passed into law a bill that expanded the availability of assisted suicide. So previously, it had been available under certain circumstances. Andre Schouten, who's a constitutional lawyer, summarizes it like this. Assisted suicide has been legal in Canada since 2016 for those aged 18 plus who expressed a wish to die, who had a grievous and irremediable medical condition that caused the patient enduring physical or psychological suffering that is intolerable to them, and whose natural death has become reasonably foreseeable. So that's what most people think about when they think about MAID or assisted suicide. But in 2021, those guidelines changed. Parliament officially passed Bill C-7 that expands the availability of assisted suicide to anyone who is suffering because of disability, disease, or a relevant condition. So again, very broad and vague. What in the world does that mean? And people in the medical community are struggling with this. Again, according to Schouten, the bill not only drew the ire of disability rights groups, but also the repeated criticism from the United Nations and public condemnation from hundreds of physicians, First Nations leaders, academics, and religious leaders. In a rare move, both the New Democrats from the political left and the Conservatives from the political right voted against the Liberal government's bill. And this isn't about politics. What I'm doing is just, I want to highlight something that's going on in this country. We think as Canadians, we're middle of the road. We're kind of kind, gentle, moderate people. When it comes to these issues, we are on the radical extreme for both the start of life and the end of life. Now, I sympathize with people who are dealing with a loved one and they're suffering, and these are challenging, complicated situations. Again, I believe the principle is to be life-giving, not life-taking. And I also want to add a pastoral word, something that most people don't recognize. When this path is chosen, quite often there's pain and hardship in a family beyond which you can know. When a parent decides to do this and children disagree about the decisions, there is fracture, there is fighting. Sometimes a parent chooses this, the children disagree, they're in therapy, they're struggling for a long time dealing with the pain of a decision that they do not understand. A recent children's book tries to explain assisted suicide by calling what happens medicine. That's a gross misuse of the term. Category 8, anger. So perhaps it seems strange as a category, but it will make sense momentarily as we move into Jesus' words in Matthew 5. So here he's teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, and he's been providing this authoritative teaching, and this is what he says, beginning at verse 21. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Oops. Guilty. Jesus is pushing the issue deeper. Anger is so significant, it makes you liable to judgment. Continuing, whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. Whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. Now, some of your translations will say raka, which is a derogatory Aramaic word, kind of like airhead or idiot. That's the idea. Saying these sorts of things will be in danger of the fire of hell. Verse 23, so if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come back and offer your gift. And the idea is this would have been surprising to people because nothing's more important than giving your gift to God or your sacrifice at the altar in the temple. He's like, no. If there's some sort of disagreement, if there's something that could cause anger or there's something that will result from anger, go deal with it. It's that important. Do that first. Verse 25, come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're going with them to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and be put in prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you've paid the last penny. And so the point here is escalation. You never know what will happen in that escalation in the physical realm. Maybe you'll end up in jail because of what you've done, but also there's a spiritual realm too, with what is going on in the heart and the anger that can be cultivated there and spill out in unimaginable ways, putting us in danger. The point is escalation. So recently I came across a comic strip, although it's not funny, but it shows the issue of escalation. So here's panel one, and I'll kind of explain them as they unroll. What a harmless little creature. And the guy's pointing down at a little line, and that line is evil habits. Panel two. Isn't it interesting? He picks up the evil habits. Well, that's cute. He's not really taking it seriously. Panel three, watch him grow, and he's put those evil habits, they're wrapping around his arm, and if you could see it a bit closer, you'd see that it's not a little piece of string, it's actually a snake. Panel four, but can't he grip tight? And he's gripping around the arm. Oh my goodness, this is a problem. Panel five, I can hardly shake him loose. These are the evil habits growing and growing, a python size. Panel six, too late, help, help. And so the point is escalation. Jesus is saying that anger is like this. If we don't deal with it in humility, with patience, and with grace, it will grow into be something that we cannot control. It will grow, and you're like, okay, maybe I haven't murdered someone before, but maybe I've been dealing with this anger or this frustration, this lack of patience deep within me, and it's growing. Well, if we let it unchecked, this may be what happens. So let me leave us with four takeaways. And the first is quite simply that anger doesn't lie dormant. That's the point that Jesus is making, and it's a point that we, I think, need to take seriously. In World War II, people called America the sleeping giant. Remember that? Because it was so big and powerful, but it was kind of reluctant to get involved. And then after Pearl Harbor, the sleeping giant was awoken and things changed, right? Anger is the sleeping giant. We do not want it to wake in the wrong ways. Two, reflect God, don't play God. That's the central principle that we're trying to think about here. Generally speaking, when you are life-giving, you are reflecting God. When you are life-taking, you are playing God. Third, it's the question, what shapes your moral compass? This has been an invitation for all of us to think about that. And maybe you've had strong reactions to some things that I've said. Maybe you've agreed with everything. Maybe you've agreed with some and not the other. That's okay. The idea is for us to be honest about, okay, what is shaping what I believe and why I believe it? Is it political opinion? Is it friends? Is it media? Whatever it happens to be. My hope is that we wrestle with Scripture in the process as we strive to reflect the life-giving God. And finally, a closing reminder that we all need grace because none of us is squeaky clean. And as we navigate this difficult and complicated life, which is very painful, we just need the reminder that we all need the grace of Jesus, every single one of us. Thankfully, we turn to Him, we trust Him, we come to Him seeking forgiveness, and we come with a spirit of repentance, trusting who He is and what He has done for us. His hands are always wide open to His people. As Carson said, He came to pay a debt He did not owe, because we owed a debt we could not pay for a whole host of reasons. Final word, life is intentional, not accidental. Life is incredible, not expendable. And we live in a world that is infatuated with death. Have you noticed this? It's like every single TV show, you can't get away from death and murder. Like the majority, that's become normal. We become numb to it. The most popular podcast category is true crime. Now, why is that? I don't know. Is it because we're infatuated with death? Maybe we like the bad guy getting caught. Maybe We are scared to death or scared to death of life itself. We don't know, and this is some way of processing our complicated emotions. I do not know. However, today hopefully has been a reminder of Richard Mao's statement that God created us all. Even the shattered and broken ones are still his original works of art. In the movie Ironweed, it came out in 1987, two Hollywood heavyweights, Meryl Streep, Jack Nicholson, and they come out of that, it looks like a bar late at night. They're stumbling around. Clearly, they've had too much to drink. And in the snow, they see a lady lying there. And here's some of the dialogue that happens between the two. Is she drunk or a bum? Just a bum, been with her all her life. And before that, she was a prostitute in Alaska. Well, she hasn't been a prostitute all her life before that. I don't know, just a little kid, I guess. Well, Nicholson's character replies, a little kid's something. It's not a bum and it's not a prostitute. It's something. Let's take her in. And so they take her in. Why? Because she's somebody's kid. And that is true for everyone made in the image of God. They're somebody's kid, just as you are. Ours is a life-giving God. Let's reflect him with our royal pedigree. Amen.